Well, good afternoon, everybody. I'm sorry to interrupt the conversations there. It's good, post-lunch conversations. Everyone who's just enjoyed a nice lunch and is looking forward to a very comfortable little snooze afterwards, you've come to the wrong session. I'll introduce our speakers. My name's Wayne Cannon from Queensland Treasury, and I'll be the chair for this session. Hopefully you are here, just to be clear for everyone, and feel free to run out if you need to. Retirement planning and social security is the topic, and I'll introduce Gary Kemke, who's going to present that in just a moment. I'll just go through the quick little housekeeping duties that we have to do. Just remind everybody. Are you happy to take questions through the presentation, or would you prefer them at the end? So feel free to ask a question on the way. But if you do, please go to the microphone. So if you just sort of wander over the mic, Gary will obviously know there's a question to be answered. And if you could please go to the microphone and identify yourself. It's very important. Everyone here who doesn't get to go to the sessions, obviously, there's a lot of people see these on the web, and it's really important to hear the questions clearly. I'll remind everybody, and I'll remind you again at the end, if you could please go and give your feedback on the session. That's always looked at very carefully by the organisers, and it's very, very valuable input, so please do that through the app or via the microsite. And I think that might do, so let me, without further ado, introduce Gary. So Gary Kemke, I'll read his bio out here. He's a senior lecturer in actuarial science and statistics at ANU. He completed his PhD from ANU in 2013 and gained fellowship of the Actuaries Institute in 2015. Fairly quickly, I might say.
Thank you.
That's very impressive. He's been, prior to being at ANU, has been instrumental in establishing the actuarial program at Bond University, and in fact that's where I've dealt with Gary. He's done a fantastic job getting that program off the ground. His main research area is on the quantitative analysis of optimal decision making across an individual's financial life cycle, and that's obviously what today's presentation is about. And he's also involved in the development of an online retirement calculator with researchers from ANU, UNSW, and the University of Melbourne. And without further ado, I hand it to you, Gary.
Thank you, Wayne, for this very flattering add-on comments. All right, so we're going to talk about retirement planning, social security, taxation. This work is effectively done in conjunction with my co-author, who's hiding away here. So all the hard questions go to him. So Adam's here, and Luke is a honors student up at Bond University who's finishing his honors year, and he's the one working on this at the moment. So here's a very, very... It's essentially a simple visual representation of lifetime financial planning. You have various different aspects. Essentially, you need to plan from the moment you start working until death. And a lot of the research essentially only looks at one part of this. So they either only look at post-retirement or pre-retirement. Very few research work out there takes the whole of life into consideration. So the model that we build can be as simple as you want or as complicated as you can solve. The more realistic you make it, the harder it gets to solve. And so the different things that could be included in this model are, for example...
Do you want to use that so you can face the screen?
No, I'll just do this. Yeah. So the different things that could be included in the model are house purchase, health states, family states, birth of a child, marriage, divorce, death of spouse, so on and so forth. And the current work that we have is fairly simple in nature. The intention is to, in future, make the model bigger to include as make it as realistic as possible. The decisions, examples of decisions are consumption, savings, asset allocation throughout life, withdrawal in retirement, and when and how to retire. So these are essentially the decisions that we have. On that, we call these decision variables control variables. So the term control variables essentially comes from Merton, Black-Scholes and Merton's Merton. And he says that there are essentially three things that an individual has control over. An individual doesn't have control over what investment returns the market is going to give you, but they do have control over what is your asset allocation. An individual, to some extent, does not have any control over the salary they're going to get. The salary control is a very long-term process of investing in human capital, which they have some control over, but given their human capital, they don't have control over salary to some extent. However, given salary, how much do they consume and how much do they save is something they do have control over. And they, to some extent, they have control over when and how to retire. So a lot of workplaces nowadays are moving towards a transition to retirement scheme where you can retire slowly and give up work, go down to 4 days, 3 days, so on and so forth. In this particular presentation, we'll only be focusing on the first two. So asset allocation and consumption. The third one is something I'm currently working on, but it is work in progress. Hopefully next summit I'll have something to... I am going to present it in the International Congress of Actuaries next year. So if you're there, we'll talk to you there. Okay. The underlying model that we use is essentially a dynamic programming, stochastic dynamic programming process. Anybody heard the term before? Yes, not you. Okay, cool. We have a couple of people. So essentially what happens with the dynamic programming process is you have a very long, very big question. In our particular case, we are maximizing lifetime utility. And a dynamic programming process breaks this up into measurable steps. So the steps that we have is individual age. The three main components of a dynamic programming process is you need to have a decision variable, you need to have decision variables, you need to have state variables, and you need to have stochastic assumptions. Decision variables essentially are tuning parameters, which are, in a sense, the same thing as the control variables. So the decision variables are essentially the control variables which an individual has control over, which an individual can change. The stochastic assumptions, so I'm fitting a very basic model for the time being, and in our basic model, the stochastic assumptions are just investment market returns. Investment market returns are stochastic in nature, based on historical data. I'll get to that in a minute. And state variables are something that links the steps together. So in this model, we have balance as a state variable. So how does balance link the steps together? The ending balance at a given age is the starting balance at next age. So that's how it acts as a linking variable. Other examples of state variables could be health states, family states, so on and so forth. Now, I'll give you an example of how this is done, and this is actually what we have done here. So we use a constant relative risk aversion utility function. So a CRRA utility function essentially states that a CRRA utility function is concave in nature and increases. This is essentially the functional form of a CRRA utility function, and it's states that increases being a utility function, the marginal rate of increase in utility from additional consumption is lower than the marginal decrease from a lower consumption. So people don't, you are penalized more by decreasing than by increasing. So an example would be, and obviously this works from an intertemporal perspective, 40-40 is better than 30-50. However, 30-60 is better than 40-40. So you want to be smooth, and you give up the smoothing unless there is an extra additional increase later in the future. So the way we work this is we use Australian mortality tables. So Australian mortality tables published go up to age 109. So we assume that at exact age 110, everybody dies. Now, remember, we are breaking it up into steps. So at age 109, one thing I should mention here is that the way dynamic programming works is you work recursively backwards. So you optimize the last value first and then work backwards to age 25. So we go from age 25 to 109. In the dynamic programming process, it's 109 down to 25. So at age 110, everybody is dead, no consumption, no utility. At age 109, you know you're going to die by the end of the year, so you consume everything that you have. It's a very simple thing. So for any given age, this is our lifetime utility function. And for 109, this is zero. So lifetime utility at age 109 is essentially the consumption that you have at age 109 and allowing for mortality. Now, consider age 108. So we have done 109 optimization. Now we are moving to age 108. How does this process work? Balance is a state variable. It is predefined external state variable. So we give a starting balance. Given a starting balance, you make decisions based on your stochastic assumptions, investment market returns, that will maximize this entire function. Now, you make the decisions on asset allocation and consumption, which contributes to this small Vx here. And based on your decisions, you have an ending balance. This ending balance at age 108 is the starting balance at age 109. And we have already found what the corresponding maximized lifetime utility at age 109 is. So from there, we can calculate this EVx. This is simple in two or three step models, but 109 to 85 is 85-step model, and it's much more complex as we go to younger ages. But this process recursively happens at each age. So this is a very brief overview of the modeling process. We will be writing the paper on this later this year, so if you're interested, I can send it to you on the process. Okay, so assumptions. In the investment market, we take two investment assets. ASX 200 equities are our risky asset, and Australian government bonds are our risk-free or defensive asset. Social Security and taxation, these rules are the rules as they stand pre-budget. I wrote this presentation before the budget, sir. And there were quite a couple of curlies in the budget. Some other assumptions that we make is individual works full-time from age 25 to age 65, retires completely at age 65. The only retirement product that they have is is account-based pension. While they're working, they get $85,000 in pre-tax income, and they get access to pension at age 65. That was a mistake when I first wrote this. The next iteration will have pension at age 67. The only retirement product considered is account-based pension. We do not allow for health states, family states, home purchases, mortality improvements in this particular work. They will be allowed for in the future work. And we don't make any allowances for home ownership, bequests, etc. The investment market returns are Australian returns from 1993 to end of 2016. So which taxation rules do we allow for? We allow for income tax, including Medicare levy, concessional tax on super contributions and super returns, concessional contribution limits, the 1.6 million cap, and minimum withdrawal limits. The only thing we do not allow for is transition to retirement, because I'm not 100% sure whether it's going to last and whether it's any use anymore. Pension rules. So Australia has a unique pension system, income test and asset test. Essentially, we assume a single homeowner. So the minimum of this is what the pension they get. So in the beginning, the income test starts applying, and fairly soon the asset test applies, and that's the only one that applies for an individual. So given all this, the first step was to put everything in the model, build the model, and find what are the optimum results, optimal choices an individual will make. Bruce, Wayne, you were going to ask me. We have a running joke. I call him Bruce Wayne, sir. thinking differently, one of the things I want anybody from this presentation to think differently is, how do we think about asset allocation, especially in the older ages? So asset allocation and investment horizon. So that's the main focus of this presentation. So we have two control variables here, consumption and asset allocation. So the outputs I'm going to show you is, firstly, what are the optimal choices that an individual makes under these different scenarios. So, a lot of information, please don't panic. Firstly, we'll start with the right graph. All the right graphs are post-retirement, post age 65. All the left graphs are pre-retirement from age 25 to 65. The green line is 65. The orange lines are 75. Blue lines are 85, and the pink / magenta lines are 95. The solid lines are when there are no tax rules. In the absence of tax, what are your decisions? And the dotted lines are what are your decisions in the presence of tax. So first, build a model which has no tax, no pension. We call that model our base model. And then we first add all the tax rules. And all we are doing here is comparing what is the impact of just the Australian tax rules on optimal decisions. So, post-retirement, essentially there is not much different. There is slightly higher consumption after retirement for per dollar of balance. Our x-axis is balance. Y-axis is consumption. So per dollar of balance, you consume slightly higher amounts. The reason you consume slightly higher amounts is because of the minimum withdrawal rules and the cap, 1.6 million cap. If you remove those two, they're exactly the same. Pre-retirement, now tax, obviously in Australia, if you're below 1.6 million, there are no tax implications. So post-retirement tax is fairly simple. Pre-retirement is where it's interesting. So we have the green lines as age 25. Green is always the lowest age. And pink is always the highest age. So 25, the orange is 45, the blue is 55, and the pink is 64. Solid is base, and dotted is with tax. So as we can see, we always consume less in the presence of tax than in the presence of no tax rules or in the absence of tax. One of the reasons is your expected present value of future income is much lower in the presence of tax. The interesting point here is to note that there is a kink at about $48,000 of consumption. This kink applies because of the concessional contribution limits. So since you get a lesser tax rate, if you are below the limit, there's a disincentive to consume. You're better off putting money in your super account. At this point, at the top, the flat line is that is the maximum you can consume given $85,000 income and a minimum 9.5% super contribution. So that's the maximum you're consuming. As your balance decreases, you tend to consume less and you put more into super. At this point, your contribution to super is 25,000. Below that, it is more than 25,000. So when you are less than 25,000, you have a disincentive to consume and put more into super. Now remember, there are two constraints here. One is the constraint of salary. So given your salary, until and unless you have access to super, you cannot consume more than your salary. We have a borrowing constraint in this model. Another is, given your salary, you have to put in 9.5% in super. In the base model, at the very top, nobody is putting anything in super because they have enough to retire on, according to the model. Here, you have to put that 9.5%, and that creates interesting issues with asset allocation. So firstly, same rules. All the lines represent the same thing. Now, on your y-axis, we have asset allocation, i.e. how much do you allocate to risky assets? In base, the theory states that if you are not earning any income, then your allocation to risky assets is independent of your balance and your age, and it only depends on the equity risk premium. So, our asset allocation is fairly constant at about 35 to 36%. With taxation rules, it's slightly lower, and again, this is a function of minimum withdrawal and pension cap. The moment pension cap starts applying, asset allocation asymptotes towards our base. Pre-retirement is interesting. So at the very top, we have a green line. We can't see it because it's covered by all the other line types. The model essentially states that until about age 38, 39, 40, you are fully invested in equities at all times. The line is slightly lower at age 45 and 55 because of the expected present value of future income in presence of taxation is much lower than otherwise. And the uptick happens because of the constraint. You have to put money in super when you shouldn't, and you should be able to consume a lot more at higher balances, but you can't. So you may as well take on more risk. Now, that was versus tax rules. This is with versus pension rules. So we have the base, no tax, no pension. Now we just add pension and see the impact on pension. Obviously, because of pension, again, we are back at consumption first. So because of pension, nobody consumes zero amounts anymore because the government gives you at least a $20,000 pension. So at the very lower end, there's a shift in the y-axis. There's a shift in consumption. However, the pension acts, there's a means tested, so it reduces as your balance increases, and that's why the slope changes and eventually asymptotes towards our base rules. At very high values, you don't get pension and you have no chance of getting a pension. However, you still will consume more than base because if something really bad happens, you always fall back on the pension. Pre-retirement, you know that you have access to pension in the future, so there is a disincentive to save and an incentive to consume. So you can afford to consume a lot more because the government will take care of you. And hence, consumption is higher as you get closer to retirement. And this kink here happens because of the income test and the asset test. So you... The interesting part is asset allocation in presence of pension. So let's look at retirement. Previously, we saw that in retirement, our asset allocation for base is independent of age and balance. In presence of pension, at very low balances, you are going to get full pension. So it's essentially a costless option to invest fully in equities. Now, the pension essentially acts to some extent as a put option to your risk-taking behavior. And it changes your risk-return profile completely. So here what we see is that as you get closer to being cut off from the pension, you de-risk. However, the moment your pension starts reducing, you start taking on more risk because if your risk comes off, you lose a lot more. You lose pension, but you're better off anyway. And if the risk doesn't come off, the pension will take care of you. The moment you lose all the pension, then you start de-risking again. And as your balance increases, you asymptote towards your base. Because at those levels, there is no hope for you to get a pension. So this is a very interesting slide from in this presentation. Pre-retirement, the theory states that as you take on the highest risk that you take on is when your bond-like income earning capacity is at its highest. So when you're young, age 25, your bond-like income earning capacity is at its highest. So you are fully invested in risky assets. If there was no pension, the closer you get to retirement, your income earning capacity decreases. However, in the presence of pension, pension is essentially a bond-like income earning capacity. The government supplements this. So at all levels, you take on more risk than in the absence of pension. And age 64, which is very close to pension access age, and your risk profile is fairly similar to post-retirement. Now, the next two graphs essentially combines all the tax and pension rules together. Nothing much different. Consumption pre-retirement, we still have the kink, and pension. So tax makes you reduce consumption, pension makes you increase consumption. As we can see, the effect of pension increases as you get older, closer to retirement, and when you're before retirement, the effect of pension is less. The effect of tax is more prominent at younger ages, effect of pension is more prominent at older ages. Pre-retirement. Asset allocation. Post-retirement asset allocation is fairly similar to post-retirement pension asset allocation. Pre-retirement asset allocation, the one interesting point is age 45, the orange line. So in the presence of both pension and tax, so in tax, as your balance increases, you take on more risk. Pension, you take on more risk. This gets compounded together. And an interesting point is this U-shape for age 45. So you first start de-risking because of your expected present value being less at lower balances. At higher balances, because of the constraints, you start increasing your risk. And at very high balances, you are fully invested in equities all over again. Because there is no if anything bad happens, the government is going to take care of you. And you, so you keep all the upside, you give all the downside to the government. Okay. Ignore that fact that I changed over for a second. So, all I've shown here so far is the optimal outcomes. What are the optimal choices for a rational individual in the world, in this particular simple model? Not in the world, in Australia. How are we doing for time? Cool. Okay, so what we did was, this is all well and good, but let's do a simulation exercise. An individual starting work at age 25 with a balance of zero. And you simulate that individual 100,000 times. And you simulate them under the base rules for different investment market. Our only stochastic variables are investment market returns. So for different 100,000 different investment market outcomes, you simulate them through all the optimum outcomes from age 25 till 109. Under base and under all rules, and see how the outcomes change. And this graph essentially presents that. It's an extremely busy graph. I'm really sorry about this. However, I couldn't find a better way of representing this. Now, the same concept holds. The solid lines are for base, and the dotted lines are for all tax and pension rules. We look at the black line. The black lines are essentially the evolution of balance over their lifetime. So in the absence of any tax and pension, and the dotted lines are in the presence of tax and pension. The red lines are is their asset allocation throughout life in both pension and base, both all rules and base. And the blue lines is the consumption. It's not very clear. Black lines, x-axis goes from 0 to 2 million. Blue lines goes from 0 to 120,000. And asset allocation goes from 0 to 1. Okay. Balance is expected. It's very smooth, so that's nice. In the presence of tax, the government takes a lot of money out, so the balance goes less. In this particular exercise, where we have a starting salary of 85,000 real per annum in their working life, balance never actually, the median outcomes do not exceed 1.6 million. So we fail to, we do not really capture what happens to the 1.6 million cap. I'll get to consumption in a minute. Let's focus on the red lines. So with the red lines, we have base, where individual is fully invested in risky assets, then slowly de-risks until retirement, and at retirement, it's essentially a flat line. In the presence of tax and pension rules, we have individual take on more risk for fully invested in risky assets for longer. They do slowly de-risk until retirement, and post-retirement, their risk profile actually increases. So as they get older, they take on more risk. And this is essentially a function of pension. Because of pension, as their balance decreases, they take on more risk, which is counterintuitive. Very older people should be de-risking and not taking on more risk. However, it is the impact of the put option that age pension provides. Consumption is interesting. So let's look at base first. We have, as We start at 60,000, approximately 60,000 at age 25. So remember, in base, you have access to the full salary of 85,000. There's no tax. So the maximum you can consume pre-retirement is 85,000. So you start at 60,000, you get up to 85,000 at about age 50, and since you can't consume anymore, you consume the entire lot. So you do not contribute to super anything after age 50. And the moment you get access to super, your consumption increases to about 90,000, 90, 95,000. And it keeps on increasing until you hit life expectancy. So the hump shape peaks at life expectancy. So it keeps on increasing until you hit life expectancy and then decreases. It never really falls to zero, except at age 110. If the borrowing constraint was not imposed, if we had no borrowing constraint was not imposed, this would generally be a straight line along here. And it essentially will be a smooth curve, peaking at 85,000 and then peaking at life expectancy and then falling down. In this particular model, we do not allow for children, marriage, divorce, home purchases. So that needs to be kept in mind when I discuss this next part. The salary you get is 85,000, then you pay tax on it. The maximum consumption you can have is about 59,500. The rest is tax and super. So at very low ages, you consume less than your maximum, so you put extra into super. Until about age 37. After you hit age 37, you're not putting anything extra into super except the minimum government contributions. And the moment you hit retirement, your consumption jumps significantly. This significant, and then follows the same path as before. This significant jump is interesting. It says that, obviously if we had no borrowing constraint and no super contribution constraint, this would be a smooth line. And the level would be shifted post-retirement. However, this essentially says that in this simple model, without family issues and without home purchases, 9.5% is okay. In this simple model. Because of the power of compounding, you put more in your earlier life for about 10, 12 years, and once you have put extra, you don't need to put anything more. 9.5% is more than sufficient. So that's essentially what we found. It has interesting policy implications. And some stuff still needs to be done. For example, we have to allow pensioner access age to 67. I wrote this and then I realized that you cannot access super until and unless you signify yourself as retired. So that first line has to be struck off. So pension access age 67 and you vary retirement from age 60 to 67 to see the various impacts. So that's for this particular paper. Then some of the other stuff I'm doing, this is mostly done. There is a technical aspect that needs to be fixed. So we want to make retirement a decision variable. People get actually choose when and how they retire. And future work is to relax all the different assumptions that we have made and make it more realistic. If everything works out, in 10 years, I hope to have a proper free robo-advice calculator up in ASIC. All right. That's it. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Gary, and Adam as well, before you have to race to your next presentation. Thank you for that contribution to that work as well. I invite any questions. There's some really interesting stuff going on there. Some cracking graphs, so there must be a question about those, I reckon. So if we could... thank you.
Hi, John.
John Duravin. Gary, look, I think the work you're doing here is bloody fantastic.
Thank you.
I think it's extraordinarily important, and you're coming out with all sorts of very interesting and important and significant conclusions to very, very real practical problems that people have on that question of asset allocation and the decision of drawdown rate. I hope you were joking at the end when you said it was going to take a 10-year time frame before there could be an app, because, you know, really people are looking for a solution. Like, I'm not talking financially highly literate people like the people in this room, but the people out there are really looking for sensible solutions to those problems. Two questions. One, have you given thought to how you parameterise rho in the context of constant relative risk aversion? And secondly, and perhaps a little more... could be a bit more challenging. I have a sense that some people approaching retirement, CRRA just doesn't really apply. They have in mind that for the last 30, 40 years they've lived, they've had a certain amount of income. They figure out what that is. Maybe you adjust it a tiny bit because you don't have to get your suits dry cleaned or something or other. But that's roughly speaking the what you expect to live on in retirement. So the second question is, is it possible or straightforward to adapt the utility curves away from CRRA to somewhat generalise them if you've got some people who are anchored a bit to their pre-retirement lifestyle?
Yep, thank you, John. Firstly, the first question, parameterising the rho. We have done some work on different rhos. So rhos go from 0 to 10. And in this particular work, we have used a CRRA parameter of 5, so rho parameter of 5, which is fairly risk-averse. And as rho increases, you are more risk-averse. As rho decreases, you are less risk-averse. The only real impact of changing rho is a shift in the level, but not in the slope. So, for example, this graph... as rho increases, everything shifts up. Sorry, as rho decreases, everything shifts up. And as rho increases, everything shifts down. You tend to take on less risk if you are more risk-averse, and so on and so forth. I didn't want to touch on this, but it was a very, very good question about different utility functions and what is a good utility function. From an individual perspective, firstly, research has shown that hyperbolic absolute risk aversion may be a better real-world utility function than CRRA, and I read that paper 3 days ago. So there are various different utility functions that can be used. From my personal This is my view, this is my take on this. An individual doesn't really care about the utility function. What an individual cares about is lifestyle. So from an individual's perspective, say an individual or a couple needs $55,000 to survive on. Whether you give them $55,000 or $58,000 or $60,000, they don't really care. So they're essentially bands. At 55, they can maintain their current lifestyle. At 45 or anything less than 55, they have to downsize or they have to move or change their lifestyle significantly. And 45 to 54 is the same to them. And the other would be 55 to 65 is the same. And at 65, they change their lifestyle again. So... from my perspective, that's what people care about. Am I getting what I need? And do I need to change my lifestyle significantly? So one of the things that I have looked at is a consumption smoothing mechanism. So some of the research there is that there is a target consumption, what do you need to do to maintain your target consumption? or a replacement income perspective. I still haven't found out in my own head as to what is the best way for that to be applied in a realistic manner. And it's something that I am indeed looking at. So my take is utility functions are irrelevant. It's a mathematical mechanism of modeling, but I can't ask anybody in this room to express their happiness in terms of utility gained.
Any other questions from the floor? We've got a little bit of time.
Please.
Estelle Liu from Wealth and Wellbeing Super. Thanks for your presentation. So I just have a question around the form of the utility function that you actually chose. So there are a lot of empirical evidence such as that people do have a bequest motive. Just wondering, is there any particular reason that you leave that bequest part out of your utility function? Thank you.
Thanks. The reason we left everything out is we wanted to start with a baseline. And as the model evolves, we want to add in more realistic elements. Bequest motive is fairly easy to add in. So just to make it simpler, we chose to leave it out.
Any last burning question? I might just quickly wrap up then. And I'll just note, Gary answered my question that I drafted, which was it was about the robustness of this modelling and could it perhaps produce a default decision set that might support robo-advice? And the answer you obviously think is perhaps yes. It certainly can contribute to that. And in line with John's question and statement there, I endorse it wholeheartedly. 10 years is too long for me. I'll be retired by then. get to work, Gary, please.
I need many PhD students.
But there's clearly a lot of value from this work, and looking very good so far. And we really look forward to hearing more about it in future. So, if everyone could please thank Gary for the presentation.
Thank you.